Well, 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 here we are again, witches. I am Blackbird. This is Hex Rated, where myself and my good friend Scarlet talk about witchcraft and all manner of other things. This week, it's more Hecate. It's all Hecate all the time. Just kidding. But we are both taking this class, and we wanted to share some of what we are learning with you. So I hope you enjoy this episode on sorceress devotion. Please enjoy.
I put a spell on you because you're mine. I can't stand the things that you do. No, 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 I'm lying. No, I don't care.
Dude, I didn't even test this shit.
Fuck,
I hope
no.
It's working. I'm sure it's working. Oh, did you make sure all your shit's plugged in?
I did make sure all my shit's plugged in. Thank you for asking.
Well, you know, I can always cut that if it, I think it's fine.
It's fine.
Holy fuck, what week. It's only Tuesday.
I keep thinking it's like Wednesday. That's the kind of week it is. It feels like
needs to be fucking
3
Friday.
Days worth of shit has happened already.
I had to drive 18 hours to a doctor because we live in the middle of the fucking country. Not really 18 hours, but an hour.
Why do you keep saying 18, dude?
Oh, shit. I did. It was totally... That's bananas. I don't know. Maybe I've done it my whole life and you're just now noticing. I don't know. But you know what I was thinking?
What?
But I should probably save this until we're ready to do corner.
Well, let's do corners.
We can get on into corner, but well, I have a nature corner. I'll get back to my original point.
I do.
My nature corner,
but go.
You will be next because everybody's all involved in the legacy of Mercedes and Percy. We had a very stressful evening, let's just say. So it rained really, really hard last night and it was starting to rain pretty hard. And it was too windy to leave the umbrella up. So I was very worried about little Mercedes because she still hasn't, these eggs have not hatched. They are still in the egg. So she's, you know, she's sitting on the eggs all wet and sad and the umbrella is not up. And I know birds live in trees, but like she has very little shelter with the dying mint plant because I can't water it because she's in it. Anyway, Pappy's like, I'm going to fix it. Like, what are you gonna do? He's like, I'm gonna make her a little house.
Oh my god, yeah.
Well, yes and no. He cuts each end out of a box, so it's like just the box part is the bottom is intact, but the ends are open. So, but it's wide enough for her to get in. But and he's like getting it on there, and he's like screwing it to the deck. And as soon as he like, of course, starts with the screw gun, the bird flies away. So now she's in a tree watching us, you know, potentially fuck with her eggs, which is not what we were doing. We're just trying to make them not float away in the deluge. So puts the box on. Bird comes back eventually, but she kind of just like looks around it and can't figure out how to get in it. So she like takes the fuck off. So a few hours, we finish dinner. We come upstairs. She's still not back. Pappy's like, I'm going to take the box off. Fuck it. She needs to be with her babies. You know, flood be damned. I'm going, I'm not, that was funny. Anyway, so take the box off. She doesn't come back. I went to bed at like midnight. She still wasn't back. Finally, she was back this morning. So she's back. Everything's good.
That's birds are back in town.
Yeah, I think everything's okay. No, she's good. I'm happy. I'm happy that she's not sad. But I bought a very special tiny clamp-on umbrella for her that will clamp I have this umbrella. It's somewhere in the house, but I can't find it. So I just bought another one because, you know, spend it like you got it, motherfucker. Anyway, umbrella incoming for the dove. This is my life now.
My creature corner, yes, is slightly less involved. I
can't wait.
Have spotted a dove of my own. There's many, many that perch in the trees and things. I don't have anything as exciting as a nest that is in my view, but I have spotted a melanistic dove. So it's not completely black, but she is much darker than a normal dove. So she still has, you can still distinguish like light and dark markings, but the overall gray is very, very dark. And then the spots that would be like more of a buff or like kind of what you would consider dove gray are a little bit darker. And I have named her in the spirit. What the fuck was that word? I am possessed to with spirits. In the spirit of Marian bird names, I have named mine Dolores.
I love it. Yes. I mean, Dolores and Mercedes need to like meet on the road to Frida Kahlo's house. I don't know, but it sounds lovely. Let's do it.
Dude, that's going to be the sequel to the folk tale about the dove and the mint.
Is that it?
And then part two is Dolores and Mercedes go to Frida Kahlo's
To Frida Kahlo's blue fancy house that I never got to go to. But I will go before I die, I promise. Okay, well, that's a lot of Nature Corner. Hey, this is X-rated. We talk about witchcraft. I'm Blackbird.
I'm Scarlet.
And we're going to, guess what we're going to talk about again, y'all? It's 3 weeks in a row, motherfuckers. We're talking about this class that Scarlett started taking, and then I broke down and started taking, because it's blowing up.
It was a 12-hour breakdown. You slept on it, and we're like, well, shit.
It was like, you didn't have to break me down too hard, did you? Also, there's, how many weeks of this class? 13?
13.
Okay, so first of all, there's 13 weeks of the class, witchy. This is the 13th round of this class, witchy.
Yes, and they're calling the Facebook group a cohort, which I like.
Yeah, it sounds very academic, right?
It's less Vampire the Masquerade than Coterie, but it's like a little less overtly insta-witch with coven. So I like it, cohort.
Cohort.
Sounds a little evil, but also official. I don't know.
Yes.
I like it.
Very, very scholarly.
Yes, it sounds very scholarly.
It does. I feel like I'm in a fucking lecture class because I have learned so much. So we're on week two. Our first episode was just Scarlett telling me what she had learned and me just like word vomiting some shit back at her. The second episode was week one. And now we are on week two, which is like how to call.
Yes. So the main topics are sorceress devotion and then the call.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just going to jump in. I really liked what he had to say about sorceress devotion versus conventional devotion. And so he spends a lot of time defining this concept. And I like what he said. He was saying that a lot of people mistake devotion for magic. And so making contact with the spirit is not, I mean, it's magical for sure.
Yes.
For sure.
For sure.
And, you know, he admits that there's something kind of, there's a purity or an innocence just to that experience. But it's the foundation for magic or sorcery. So devotion can be the means by which we compel gods or spirits. So, you know, the average Greek or Greco-Roman or Egyptian person that is not a sorcerer, not a witch, not a conjurer of any kind, their version of devotion would just, you know, sort of be you know, propitiating the gods. And he explains, which I would agree with, in general, particularly for the Greeks, interaction with the gods is mostly kind of atropateic, which means to
keep them away,
to divert harm. Like, you know, prophylactic measures. So it's sort of like, I'm going to propitiate them so they don't come and mess with me.
Best
case scenario,
almost, yeah.
I get some kind of boon or blessing or they favor me in some way. But really baseline is what I just want to be like, all my T's are crossed and my I's are dotted. Yeah. All my towels are crossed and my iotas don't have dots, because that's an Egyptian alphabet joke. There
that's,
you go.
Yeah. Womp, hey, grammar joke.
But yes,
linguistics jokes. Yes. Yeah. Like to keep them from not fucking with you. Basically, you want to not have the gods fuck with you. So you give them offerings to like make them just, you know, like kind of pass you over, basically.
But yes, it's very much that you're sort of, there's not a communion really happening. It's more right. You are doing these things to propitiate them. And so sorceress devotion would be different, because you are doing these devotional elements to draw them to you so that you can actually interact and either work with them or get their guidance or compel them in some way to aid you in a work of magic.
So, I would like to point out at this point, sorceress, we are spelling it sorcerer, O-U-S. We yes. are saying sorceress as
the
like
adjective,
a
not the sorceress. Adjective,
not sorceress, right. I just want everybody to know, because it sounds the same, but right, sorceress. Yes. Okay, so, right. So the difference is, with magic, you are calling them in. You want to develop a relationship with the gods. So I really enjoyed, and I don't know if I'm skipping ahead, you tell me and make me go back, but I love the fact that he basically says, look, there is a way for them to get you to get them to notice you. And I loved his analogy. It was like, well, you know, if you were in a crowded room and somebody was like, hey, Scarlet, you may not look, but then if I was like, hey, Scarlet from Dallas, well, that might get your attention a little bit more. And if I was like, hey, Scarlet from Dallas in that house that's like a gingerbread house, and then if I gave you the exact coordinates, say, or whatever, you would definitely like turn around and be like, who are you?
Yeah. You know,
I loved that.
Obviously, the more information you have, right. showing that, proving that you know the spirit right. that you are trying to contact, that you are familiar with them, that you're not just hollering at people out your window on the street or something. Yes, I very much like that. He also had another analogy that I liked, that was basically, if someone's breaking into your house and you call 911, you first of all dial 911. You can't dial 991 or 912 or some other or 191. Like, you have to dial the actual number correctly,
that exact number,
and then right. you have to say your address and what the crime is happening, and they will come.
Right.
And you know, if you call one of these other numbers and then you tell them, oh my God, someone's breaking in my house, the police are not coming. So right. he likens, he lays out basically a checklist or a protocol for how to summon the gods, like how to prepare yourself and set up this interaction. And it seems a bit rigid and strict. I was kind of balking or chafing at it. Yeah. But once the lectures were complete, I'd like to note, I feel like what we're about to get into, he's saying this is the protocol for this style of magic. So right. if you were doing another system, you know, if you're doing voodoo or eclectic Gardnerian witchcraft or something, or if you're doing Catholicism, if you're doing another system, then these rules may or may not apply. But since we're doing a specific style of witchcraft that we're learning here, which is based in late antiquity, is based on right. the PGM, is based on Greco-Roman and Egyptian sorceress magic, that this is sort of like the basic checklist. This is your 911 call. You have to get the phone number right. You have to get the address and the crime. So, which is not to say, oh, you have to do this or it won't work or Hecate won't come or you won't, you know,
right.
I don't, he's definitely not saying that. But I think that it's sort of, you know, for me who hates authority and hates being told how to do things and when to do them in what order. I feel like, okay, I'm going to just hold my tongue.
Right.
Take his word for it and be like, I have paid money and spent time listening to these lectures and taking notes and reading the materials that are provided. And I'm going to do it his way because that is what I have signed up for.
Right.
So that's sort of my disclaimer on that. And I'd like to get into the actual protocol. But first, he does spend a lot of time talking about purity, which was one of those things that as a term,
yeah,
really grates on me.
I know. Right. Also, just I don't want to give away too much of this class because this is a guy who is doing this, you know, for money. Like we clearly are not him. We clearly have not done the lengthy study that he has in this subject matter. So what you're getting really from us is a very high level summary plus like our own personal anecdotes. I just want to make that super, super clear. This is not what you're hearing from us is not the class.
No. And I mean, yeah. I wouldn't feel comfortable doing that. Obviously, it's proprietary material. He spent,
right,
you know, years, decades,
and years and years and years. Yeah.
To prepare this material. And I think right. that he is the author of it, deserves credit for it. And I'm not trying to undercut or circumvent the class. So basically, absolutely. These are just kind of some of our reactions and thoughts of right. stuff that came up. So the topic of purity. Yeah.
Yes, let's go back to that.
So, you know, basically outside purity, like literal bathing, ritual bathing, or some kind of thing that is anesthetizing your physical form.
Consecrating the space.
Yeah, inside purity, like mental focus, whatever. And you know, he suggests maybe fasting or abstaining from sex, you know, physically cleaning yourself, all of that. That obviously is like a huge issue for
thing
me.
Thing I don't want to do.
Because, and right. not that it's actually a problem. It's not
no.
like
right.
I can't skip lunch or whatever. But for me, because he was talking about, you know, he admits that a lot of people are like, oh, okay, rules.
Try not to suck any dicks on the way to the parking lot. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, and he says, you know, it's not about being, you know, this kind of Judeo-Christian idea of purity or something.
Right. Right.
Of virginity or whatever. But, and he mentions, you know, people are like, well, we're sex positive. We don't want to like sex shame people. And he was like, well, so were the ancient Egyptians.
Right.
And they still adhered to these things. I'm going to say just as a modern adult woman, though, the idea of enforced fasting or abstaining from food and being told to abstain from sex is something we're told every day.
Yep.
So
yeah,
it means something a little bit different than it would for an adult man, because the assumption is that men are always ravenous for sex and always down to fuck, which is a misconception in and of itself, but
true,
you know. And then by analogy also with food, I think that the idea that men are supposed to have a hearty appetite, that they
or can
are
just
to
eat whatever they want because they're big and strong and they need the food and
they're carnivorous and you know
right.
and it
also grand generalizations, right?
No, but I mean these are things that are kind of like, I mean, it's not true,
right.
but it's
right.
things
exactly.
that our culture assumes.
Yes.
Whereas women are constantly either literally being told by other people, like, do you really need a second helping, or
do you need that cookie?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
Or we are telling ourselves that.
Right. Yes.
You know,
for sure.
So we are already policing that.
Yeah. Right.
There's a great line from the seminal Riot Girl band Bikini Kill that says
Bikini Kill.
women are well acquainted with thirst. Yeah. And it means basically like we're always being told to like watch what we're eating, to like make
watch
ourselves
our shit,
smaller,
like,
you yeah. know, and also to yeah. not, you know, we're supposed to be attractive but not slutty. So right. yeah. to me,
live on this knife's edge right. of all of these descriptions, please.
So totally the idea pleasant. That like, you know, out of your however many out of your week, you're setting aside a few hours to not eat or have sexual intercourse with yourself or others. And that to me means something different for an American or Western man than it does for a woman.
Yeah.
It just has, because I yeah. feel like that is something that I am considering all the time, always.
Yeah.
So I'm right. not saying don't do this, but to me, I have to really frame it as a different word than purity, because the inverse of purity is impurity. That means dirty, bad,
right?
Like morally flawed in some way. Like there's just,
what if you think about it as focus? I mean, right. that's kind of how I saw it, or how I reckon it, I guess, is that, you know, I of course do not prescribe to the word pure or purity. I mean, and I know that would have been a concept in antiquity, but like you said, it does not resonate now. And also, as you've stated, we police this all the time ourselves. Our culture forces it on us. So for me, it would be more about, well, I'm going to choose to, you know, have my focus solely on this thing that I want to do, which I kind of try to do anyway. If I'm going to do a magic working or a spell or something, you'll prepare, right? I mean, sometimes you're just on the fly and be like, I'm going to do a spell right now because I need to, or whatever. But like, if it's something I really, really am focused on and have like maybe spent time writing, or spent time, like the times that we were, you know, together and doing stuff that we would write for days and then come together and do a ritual, like I'm going to prepare for that in some way. Now it may not be in those exact ways, like fasting or abstaining from sex, but I do think, you know, having the singular focus is not the worst idea.
No, absolutely. And I think thinking that was exactly the note that I wrote to myself. You nailed it, of thinking of it more as focus. And so right. by abstaining or removing these other, you know, very mundane day-to-day quotidian types of habits temporarily, you're basically signaling to yourself, hey, it's about to get witchy in here. You're signaling to the spirit you want to commune with, like, hey, I'm serious. Hey. Yeah. You know, it's not like you just have them on speakerphone and there's right. music going on in the background or whatever. Like, you're right. here to talk to them. So setting the stage as a trigger, one, for yourself, and two, to denote focus and respect to the spirit. Totally makes sense. Totally fine with that. Yep. Really just getting hung up on this word purity.
Purity, yeah. But, now we've talked about the cinnamon before, but I didn't know. I mean, I just thought cinnamon's fucking cool. But I didn't know, like, it was beloved by the gods.
Yeah, I don't really know the source on that either.
I will find it.
I will say I have done it. So in the Hecateon, he suggests...
Yeah.
One way to ritually purify yourself, if you can't just like take a shower and do all that, would be to dust your hands with cinnamon. And mm-hmm. In the book, he actually suggests doing it 5 times. And I did that. And it just is fun because, one, cinnamon yeah. smells Ugh. Great if you're not allergic to it or something. Two,
all the time.
You know, again, it's a trigger. It's not that I think that I am dirty and bad and now need to try to fix myself up. it's right. a signal that I am entering a mental space, a spiritual space, a physical space that is different. And right. so that's all. The other thing I'd like to say, which he doesn't really talk about but ties into this, is in ancient Greece they believed in something called miasma, which was obviously 2,000 or 3,000 years before the advent of germ theory. They didn't really understand how people got sick.
Right.
And we know that a lot of diseases are airborne. So they weren't completely wrong in thinking that bad airs or smells air in general, or things yeah. in the air were making you sick. And to them, right. it was all, I mean, they didn't have an idea about bacteria and viruses and things like that. They just knew that sometimes you could breathe around other people that were sick and you would get sick too.
Right.
And so this idea of somehow there is some kind of substance that's emitted by unclean things. And I mean, in a literal unclean way, like they're sick or, you know, it's
there is sewage.
There's yeah. raw sewage or something.
Right.
So in ancient Greek, like Orthodox religion, not Greek Orthodox meaning Christianity, but the Orthodox form of ancient Greek religion is what I mean. There were a lot of very detailed procedures for removing miasma for various situations, specifically like going into a temple or performing certain kinds of rituals. And, you know, things, ritual purifications that you need to do at certain stages of life or moments. Like if you kill someone, you know, you then have this miasma of death upon you. So I would say one, the concept of miasma is obviously antiquated. It yeah. is based on an imperfect idea of how literal physical disease of the body is transmitted. I did sit in on some hotel hours with the various Hellenistic groups at PantheaCon, and I heard a novel explanation for miasma, and Ooh. This person was talking about how the gods are immortal. They're made of right. immortal god stuff. You are made of it as well, but you are also made of mortal stuff. And right. so to signal to the gods that you want to come into their presence, that you want to commune with them, you try as best you can to temporarily set aside some of this human miasma, this mortal miasma. Mm. Which, again, I still feel is like a hierarchy of good, bad, moral, immoral, yeah, dirty, well. Clean. Like
So judgy. Yeah.
So,
right.
So that's all to say that basically the purpose of, to me, of these steps in this protocol are more to program your own mind and kind of develop these triggers so that every time after that you do it, you're more and more just hitting the ground running, ready to get into that state of mind, ready to interact with this specific spirit or whatever.
Well, it's like the same kinds of things you would do. Like you always do the same set of things before you start trance work or anything, you know, there's always like a certain set of things. Now they may change a little, they may vary a little depending on what you're doing, but you're always going to use, or I usually have some sort of trigger, especially for like deep meditation or trance or even spell work. There's always certain things that are done
right. And I to me the fine line is determining which. On the one hand, you don't want to become so dependent on these steps or these accoutrements or whatever that you feel like you cannot proceed without them.
Right.
I think yeah. that is a really bad mental trap to get yourself into. So if you're like, I want to do this spell or this devotional or this ritual or whatever.
Oh, but I got to have this special knife.
Yeah, I need my yeah, special yeah. cinnamon or, you know, or I need this particular yeah. incense or I need to put on my special robe or whatever. That is definitely a roadblock that you are creating that doesn't need to be there and you're doing a disservice to yourself. On the other hand, I tend to have the opposite problem where I'm like, Yeah, you get the gist of it.
You know, where I tend to get really lazy about doing all these steps and stuff because I'm like, you get the idea. So, I mean, there's something. So both extremes have their issues.
There's a happy middle.
Yes, exactly.
Like, to me, it's not so much about the paraphernalia. It's about the mental preparation that I'm doing. So, like, if I am going to do trance or unguided meditation, I guess you would call it, you know, there's always like a series of things that happen in my head. Just like you see like numbers and colors, I see like I'm going down an elevator. So like that, but like having this stuff, like, yes, I have long since like thrown off those chains of like, I need this special thing. Like, it's always fun to have those things. But like you said, a lot of times you're not any, and he mentions this, if you are like in the forest and you don't have any fucking cinnamon on you, or, you know, there, sometimes you're just like, you want to do something right then and you don't have all the stuff. Now, he suggests a couple of remedial things you can do to help in his form of magic that he talks about, carrying a little packet of cinnamon with him everywhere, which, I mean, that sounds great to me anyway. And then also, I really liked the idea of having just like honey and spring water mixed up in a bottle all the time as like an offering, because that's like a traditional offering.
Yeah, that goes back thousands and thousands of years. And it doesn't go bad. So it's not like having Twinkies or something. Well, actually, Twinkies don't really go bad for a very long time either.
Yeah, they're also gross.
Twinkies, the perfect magical offering.
Oh, yeah. No. Okay. So, all right. What have I glossed over there? Right. I guess long and short of it, I mean, he has some workarounds to not get trapped in the, I need this special thing and I need to, you know, like have this before the gods will even look at me. I personally don't necessarily think that's true, because I feel like I already have a relationship with Hecate. I mean, I'm pretty sure I do. And he will also concede to that. He will say, you know, many of you already have a practice. You are already in a relationship. I am interested in doing some of his workings just to see what fucking happens, because honestly, I was listening to one lecture and I can't remember, but I texted you immediately, because like as soon as he said one thing, every single hair on my body just stood straight the fuck up. It was crazy. I don't remember which, I have it written down somewhere, but I don't remember.
I believe it was him saying that Hecate is beneath your feet. She's all around you all the time.
Yeah, it was crazy. And yeah.
So one last thing, like, about the purity and the preparation and the protocol stuff. I will say, to me, it's also about effort. It's the idea of, if you're going to ask for something, or if you want to cast a spell or have something happen or make some kind of partnership with a spirit or whatever, you have to give a little to get a little. You can't just roll up to somebody's house and be like, give me $100, you know. Like, you gotta like call them, make sure they're home, like probably maybe bring something, ask them about how they're doing. Like, you know, there's all these steps that you do if you want to interact with somebody, or if you want to get something, that you need to do practical steps to make sure that this happens, you know. And to me, some of these steps are along those lines. It's saying, look, I've studied you. I have studied this process. I have set aside this time. I respect your time as the spirit I want to commune with. So basically, to me, it's not about sacrifice or cleanliness. It's about, I have made a specific effort, like, around intention, this event to...
Right.
Focus myself, and also to accommodate whatever spirits I'm inviting in, to let them know that they're welcome, to let them know that their time is respected. So I think that, to me, helped me kind of get around my initial knee jerk, like, ugh, don't tell me what to do.
Which is certainly not the tone that this had, but I am just absolutely so deeply knee-jerk against.
No, I was kind of knee-jerk too, because, and I like the fact that he addressed it, because he did say, you know, because he also talks about, and we don't have to go into it, but he talks about, you know, if you're going by the traditions of antiquity, there are certain days you would choose to call Hecate. It would be Saturday. But it would, like, say it's not a Saturday, say it's not Dark Moon, say it's not, you know, like, I like his suggestion of how, like, it can be a different day, just, like, change up what you say. So if it's, like, what's Zeus's day? Sorry.
Thursday.
So if it's Thursday, you're like, oh, you can say, oh, child of Zeus, like, call her by, you know, kind of, like, associating her with some other deity that she had something to do with on that day. So I find that a little bit, like, too precious of a machination for me. Like, I'll probably just wait until Saturday. Like, it might be easier. But, like, I did enjoy that he had put some thought into, well, if you don't have this time and it's not the right hour and you don't have cinnamon and you don't have XYZ, like, can you still call a god to you? And the answer is yes. I mean, and I think you can anyway, like, despite, like, his brand of magic or whatever, of course you can. Just there might be certain things that might get that god's attention more, better, easier than whatever you're doing. Maybe. I don't know, because I haven't really tried it yet.
Right.
So.
Yeah, so I would say basically, like, what I would boil down his protocol to would be you do something that is creating outer purity. So if you can't do a ritual bath or something, his easy hack is to powder your hands with cinnamon and say kind of a little prayer or some words to that effect of saying, I am making myself smell like deliciousness. Then inner purity. So, you know, if you want to fast or feel well rested or abstain or whatever it is that you do to feel most importantly confident, you know, and he talks a lot about this too, and I don't really feel compelled to get super into it, but he talks a little bit about will. Because a lot of magic is like, well, if you just wish hard enough, like, if your will is strong enough. But there's a lot of things. Yeah, in a perfect world, I could just meet all my goals. I would just do the things that I want to do and succeed. Obviously, like, we're not all perfect people. We have all of our own issues, you know, mental issues, you know,
life gets in the fucking way too. Right.
Like, yeah. Like, money constraint, time constraint, all of these things. So there are lots of, like, little tricks and hacks and triggers and stuff that you can avail yourself of to make it easier so that you are not just having to rely on having, like, an ironclad will, because if you did, you probably wouldn't do magic. You would just be, like, winning at life all day, every day, every minute that you're awake. So, so one, inner purity, outer purity, and hold on.
And, well, and then, sorry, I'll cut.
Oh, you consecrate the space.
Right.
You pick the time and hour.
Right.
And you have a gift or an offering.
Right.
And then you do a formal call, and he describes, this is kind of a subheading of these steps. So inner, outer purity, consecrate the space,
make an offering.
And then the call. Now, his formula for this, and I went back and looked at some of our rituals, and we basically do this as well.
We do it. Yeah,
it doesn't necessarily have to be in this order, but obviously you would do name. So in the Mad Lib of this call, it would be so-and-so, Hecate. And their lineage, you know, like, oh, daughter of Perseus and Asteria, or, you know,
famed aunt of the dread sorceress Medea or whatever. So, right. you know, saying that you know who they are, just like Blackbird was saying, you know, if someone shouts your name in a crowd, you're less likely to turn around. If they start adding more information to show that they know you and that they mean you specifically as opposed to anyone else named that, you're going to get their attention better. This is the right. idea. So then there are associations like Lady of the Crossroads, Keeper of the Keys, Torchbearer, you know, whatever. There are jurisdictions, you know, Psychopomp,
Ruler of the Underworld, or Substitute Queen. He yeah. used Substitute Queen for Persephone.
Yeah.
The one who questions the sun. Yeah, yeah. Like, lots of amazing shit. Yeah.
Yeah, and things from their story. Just like how if right. you were trying to prove you knew somebody, you would be like, yeah, you're the one that takes Kore by the hand and leads her to the Underworld and leads her back up in spring. Or, you know, whatever. And yeah,
you were the one in senior class that always fell asleep in the back. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yeah. I'm not trying to talk right. to that person.
Me neither.
And then these epithets. So, yes. and that is kind of a separate topic, which we may or may not get to. But so those are the basic steps.
Right.
And so for him, the inner purity, outer purity, bathe, the hack would be the cinnamon, inner purity, fasting or abstaining. One of his hacks is, of course, in the ancient world, nighttime didn't count. So it's not right. like fast for 24 hours. It's fast for daylight hours. Like, so sort of like how you would do in Judaism or Islam.
Yeah. Right.
Or, you know, just have a light snack or have something vegetarian or something. Any of these things. And we just talked about that at length of how and why and what the symbolism would be. I'm already vegetarian, so that's not really like a big... So for me, that wouldn't be a big sacrifice. That wouldn't right. be setting up this time and hour as being special in any way. Right. Oh, and then that was the other thing, hour and time. So his right. hack, again, as we mentioned, was instead of having to do it on Saturday or on the dark moon or on the hour... Basically, just take what you got when you're going to do it, and you can basically explain it away.
Right. And, I loved it.
Yeah, and I really like that. And then lastly, you know, you do your gift. His gift, you know, really is just, these are all common to the ancient world, would be, you know, an egg, olives, you know, bread,
garlic,
wine. Yeah. He mentioned, which I thought was a really good point, that the production of mead predates yes. the cultivation of domestic grapes.
Right.
So, yep. and of course, we use honey in our rituals. And I love this symbolism because honey doesn't go bad. So honey and spring water, you know, you could just mm-hmm. have it in a little bottle or something.
In your car.
Yeah, yep. and in a little, like, travel bottle or a little airline alcohol bottle or whatever you want to do.
Yep.
So I thought that that was a really good hack. And then you do these calls. Now, of course, you could just read verbatim something from antiquity. His invocations are kind of adapted from or inspired by those, but they're original poetry and they are quite enjoyable, or you could write your own thing. Yeah. I wanted to go back to the days of the week, if you don't mind.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to do it as like a little just thought exercise? So well, I made some notes. So obviously Saturday is the day of Hecate because Saturn, Kronos, was the king of the Titans. Hecate right. is a Titan. Also, that planet rules the domain usually of like harvest, time, you know, baneful magic, things of in the ground, things that have to do with the beginning and ending of life cycles. So a very right. liminal day. So yes. obviously that's all her jam. That makes perfect sense. The second one would be Monday, moon day. Right. So she's often conflated with Selene or Artemis, so that's pretty obvious. That yep. makes sense. So Tuesday is, in German, is the Germanic languages, like English, is Tyr's day.
Tyr's day, yeah.
Tyr is the god of war, so he is analogous to like Mars or Aries.
Right.
So to me, what I came up with was the fates. He talks about Hecate being, or the Furies.
The instrument of the fates,
yeah, an
right.
instrument of the fates, like an instrument of the Furies.
Right.
In some myths, she's even the mother of the Furies. So that's commonly one of her epithets or one of her associations. So maybe that idea of this sort of like retribution or justice or like action.
Yeah.
So that was what I came up with for Tuesday.
Yeah, I like that. Well, she's also, you know, referred to as the goddess of fear, or, you know, men pray to her on the battlefield. So, like, yeah, that would totally work.
Yeah, I like that, too. Wednesday is Woden or Odin's Day in Germanic languages. In the Latin-based languages, it is the day of Mercury or Hermes.
Ooh.
So Odin, I was thinking about that. He's, you know, the stranger. He's often pictured as like sort of the classic Gandalf hermit guy, which is very much a Hecate vibe.
Yep.
He's sort of a wanderer, a sorcerer. These are all things that Hecate is also into. He also has a, Odin has his own story of hanging from the world tree to gain knowledge.
Right.
So this idea of traveling between the worlds, purposely traveling between life and death and coming back. So that kind of liminal psychopomp, you know, he's kind of the psychopomp of himself. But so that
how would you sew those together, though, since they're not exactly the same, you know, from the same
pantheon
mythology?
Oh, I don't really have pantheon. A problem. Well, because
just mix it up.
Yeah.
Just be like, OK.
Yeah.
I'm
but
down.
I mean, or you could just do Hermes, or where Hermes is the same thing. He's a god of cleverness. I mean, this is why, you know, in Germanic they use Odin and in the other ones they use Hermes, because they had the same ideas about what happens on that day and what, you know, spheres are influencing that day. So Hermes as well is considered sort of a wanderer, a god of like travel. He's a psychopomp.
Yeah.
He leads souls to the underworld. He is also a god of like wit and intelligence. He's also the god of like thieves and politicians and stuff. So, you know,
you could work that in.
Yeah, definitely.
For sure. Yeah.
That all makes sense.
Okay. And then
Thursday.
Yep.
Thor's day or Zeus, Sky Daddy, Lightning Guy times.
Lightning Guy. Yeah. Right. And that's easy because Zeus, remember we talked in one of the episodes recently, we've done so many, about how the translation is kind of like, and Zeus let her continue to, you know, be
Hecate, a sovereign of her own domain.
Yeah. Be a sovereign of her. Thank you. Word bucket. Right. Even though it was more like she could not be contained. So it really wasn't up to Zeus. But you could kind of like somehow word that around it.
Well, and also the idea if Thursday has sort of a celestial sky sort of vibe, she is the daughter of Asteria.
Right.
So and she is the first cousin to Eos, Selene, and Helios. So the idea of being sort of a cousin to the heavenly bodies. So she definitely has a pedigree of up in the sky, stars,
and things.
Asteria, her mother, that literally means starry goddess.
Right.
Friday was a little harder for me. So Friday is Freya's day, or Venus Aphrodite, so the goddess of love, beauty, things like that.
Right.
I was thinking of, because Freya is certainly a goddess of love and beauty, but she's also one of the Vanir, which is sort of analogous to the Titans in the sense that they were the original kind of more nature spirits. And then they were supplanted by the Aesir, which are more of these civic gods. Which, again, with the Titanomachy, the Battle of the Titans and the Olympians, she transitioned from a Titan to maintaining her place in the new Olympian regime. So that would be related. Also, Freya is, you know, you think about love or beauty, but not just, you know, like romantic love, but also sort of fertility or, you know, taking care of children or right. just enjoying sensual pleasures like eating and drinking and having a roof over your head and all of that shit. So these things that come from the earth, you know, right. you gotta have food. Yeah. Yep. And where does it come from? Out of the ground. So, right. and she is a Chthonic spirit. She is of the earth. So that's kind of what I got. I don't know if
you. Yeah. No, I mean, I didn't go to these lengths, but I like that. Yeah.
And then the last one is Sunday, the day of Sunday. The sun. Duh.
The day of the sun. And she questions Helios when she asks Demeter, right?
No, Persephone goes missing.
Oh. Right.
She is the only one to hear Persephone call out for help.
Right.
So that's what ties her to the myth immediately. And then Helios, he's up in his chariot in the sky as the literal sun. So he was the only one to see what went down.
Oh, she goes and asks him.
So she's like, hey, eye in the sky, chopper one, what did you see?
Where is she? Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So also of interest is her priestesses are daughters or granddaughters of the sun. So, and we've talked about this when we did Circe versus Medea. That they are children, daughters of the sun or granddaughters of the sun, depending on the etymology, which I think is very counterintuitive and weird. But there are a lot of other myths about like this idea of the midnight sun or the sun goes through the underworld at night. So that there is a equal and opposite sort of dark version of the sun.
Right. Yes.
And also the sun gods are usually associated with healing, and Hecate is as well.
That's correct.
So that's what I got.
I like it. Did you want to talk about the epithets a little? I have a couple of favorites. I did not know Drakena, which means dragoness or serpentess, which I love that one.
Yeah, again, I mean, we were talking about Medea, this idea of, and he brought up a good point, which I don't know that we've ever talked about specifically, but in Greek and Roman folk practice, they believed in this idea of like the spirit of the house or the spirit of the location as being pictured as a snake.
Right.
And sometimes when you have like deified ancestors or other types of local spirits or a local hero or something, they were often pictured as sort of their upper torso and then a stank body to show that they have now sort of evolved into a being that operates in both worlds. Just the way that, like, you know, snakes can slither in the ground, they can swim in the water, they can slither on the trees. So they are fluid creatures that can pass between the worlds.
Right.
And dragon and serpent mythology definitely ties into not only her literary symbolism and stories and mythology, but also it ties into a broader belief by folk practitioners or just lay people about the spirits of the home, the spirits of the earth, the ones that you are dealing with on a daily basis are symbolized by snakes.
Right. Yeah. What are some of your favorites?
Hold on. I don't have the list in front of me.
I also really like I love Greek and how it sounds because it's beautiful. And he's very good to usually like say the Greek word, but then also tell you what it means because, you know, not all of us know the Greek. One of the very famous ones is brimo, which means angry, terrifying, fierce. And that's a great one. But basically, you know, his whole point is to call Hecate by her epithets, and not only Hecate, but like this was a practice in antiquity that you would just start like saying all of these epithets, and by doing that, the god would like understand and be interested in you, or come to you. Basically, you are calling them.
Hold on, I'm looking up.
That's okay. I can.
Some epithets. There are many, many. We talked last time about Azostos, which means unbound or ungirt. That's a good one that obviously speaks to me. We just spent 30 minutes talking about how I don't like being told what to do.
Fact.
So that checks out.
Check in. Check.
One of the ones I like is Anessa. And yeah. He talks about it. So Greek is a Indo-European language. If you are familiar at all with Latin, you might notice that it is similar but significantly different. And it has a lot of its own vocabulary. And there is what is considered a pre-Greek substratum. And what that means is the people that were living in Anatolia and in Greece and in the rest of the Mediterranean spoke whatever languages they were speaking previous to that, because those places have been inhabited on and off between ice ages for at least 40,000 years, but as many as by so anatomically modern humans, 200. So that is a disputed number, but I mean, 40 is plenty. That's a really long lot of years.
Yeah.
In contrast, Indo-European as a language, Proto-Indo-European, the one that's dated to about 8,000 years BC. And those people, this is all cutting edge scholarship. I don't want to get into an Indo-European discussion, but basically they're either from the Eurasian steppe or like Ukraine kind of area. And then they had chariots and horses. So they basically explosively moved all through Europe, down into Iberia, Italy, Greece, into Anatolia, Turkey, and then up and around the other way into Iran and India.
Right.
So, anyway, that is all to say that Anessa means queen. Right. The male is Wanax or Anax is king. But that is a much older, possibly pre-Greek word, because the ancient Greek word, and coincidentally the modern Greek word, is Basileia. King is Basileus. So I like that just because it's a real old word.
Just so old. It's just so cool. I mean, all these words sound fucking old, but right. And then, you know, some of the ones that I've heard that I knew already were like Enodia, which means, you know, of the three ways or of the three roads. Sotira, which is savior.
Which gets used in the Latin mass.
Yes.
In reference to the Jebus.
You know, okay. And this is, I mean, this might be where we end this, because I was thinking about this today, because of course in my heated fury of I need to read more Greek mythology immediately, because it's been a long time since I read old Edith Hamilton, and my book evidently fell apart and I don't have it anymore.
Oh,
so of course I immediately bought the 75th edition because it's beautiful and there's pictures in it. But I also bought Stephen Fry's he's retold the most popular stories in a book called Mythos that I guess was a bestseller. I didn't know. I love Stephen Fry.
Oh,
so
he's
I bought
a delight.
He's a delight. Bought it immediately. And sadly, you know, there's not a whole lot about Hecate in either book. Although I will say in the Stephen Fry book, there are only two mentions of Hecate, and one is on page 316. And for anyone that actually knows me, that was my roller derby number. So I didn't know if I should like take meaning in that, but I'm going to go ahead. Thank you very much.
Sure.
But I was thinking just as right before we were going to record tonight, I was thinking, is the reason that she is left out of so much of just like the general, like what we have learned in school, is it because of men? Yes. The answer is probably yes. I was just thinking, if she's so powerful and she's so much in the PGM and everything, and yet like Edith Hamilton et al. Have just like completely not said anything about it. Is it because like there was this like later myth about her being, the goddess of witchcraft, all that? Cause that was later. So like, is that the reason they just kind of like didn't talk about it? I don't know. You might know more about this.
Well, I mean, just in terms of being thoughts. Represented in official state temples and things like that.
Right.
She was probably less represented in general. Yeah. The other thing is she's not an Olympian. So when you're trying to make like a nice, neat, tidy book, like an overview of Greek mythology, you're pulling from the classical period of literature and drama. And, you know, it's very easy to be like, here are the Olympians and they are the god of this. Whereas with Hecate, she's older. It's a little confusing. What her domain is a little bit more amorphous. It's not like she's the goddess of the moon. She's sky daddy.
Because, you know, I mean,
she's the goddess of wine.
Like in Edith Hamilton, I mean, she does talk about the Titans, but Hecate's not even mentioned, and not even in the it was like almost the org chart. Nope, family tree. Like not in the book's family tree at all. I was like, well, how do you? What the fuck? What? Anyway, I was surprised. I guess I thought I would be getting all these books and like, ooh, lots of information. But like you said, classical period, drama period, not pre. So
right.
That makes sense.
And also, I mean, she doesn't feature a lot in the story, like the literary stories. So obviously when we talk about mythology as a monolith, we're talking about like, you know, individual books or plays or things that were eventually written down that were oral traditions or poems or something that are kind of more entertainment. So that would be like... Yeah. Well, they don't have a lot about Skathi in the Thor movies. No, they don't.
Okay.
Because that's not, that's a popular, that is adapted to hold your attention and be about these certain characters and is not meant to necessarily be a reflection of how people, just lay people, interact with these named characters as gods that are real in their life.
Okay.
So really
not necessarily
myth
like a sexist
that she
like,
figures in is the abduction of Persephone.
Right. Okay. Well, that makes more sense. It's not, I think I was making more out of it in my head because I was thinking, you know, she seems like such this, like when you start reading all of these like descriptions in the PGM of her, like she's such a far reaching, all powerful force.
Hecate literally means far reacher.
How did you fucking just leave that shit out of things? But like you said, they don't really, it's not necessarily in the writings except for Hesiod. So I don't know. Silence. Anyway, some of the other things that some of the like the PGM descriptions, you know, we all know key holder, the key keeper, but I loved quick footed. Shrill screamer. I love that one.
Yeah,
shrieker.
One.
Love it. And then this is nice. All giver, one who gives everything. Well, that's lovely. I mean, brilliant braided. That sounds fun too.
I like therobromon, which means roaring like a beast. Thero meaning beast, and bromos meaning yelling or
Yeah. Just like some really great, great. I think like if nothing else, I don't know, get you a copy of the PGM. I need one. I bought a copy of the Chaldean Oracles as well. Have not yet looked at those, but gonna. So yeah, lots of, it's very like, I do feel like I am in a course for school, which is amazing and what I want to do with the rest of my life. But that's been very enjoyable to me because it's very lecture based. I guess next time we can talk about the Strophilos.
Yeah, because I haven't really gotten to, I mean, I have a Strophilos and I
made it.
And yes. I have a lot to say about that. And then I actually, he describes a technique of using it sort of as a meditation or breathing tool, which I have never actually used it in that manner. And I mean to, and take some notes with some of these of my favorite epithets. So I'd like to get into that. But yeah. I mean, there's just, that's not really even scratching the surface of like some of my notes here, but.
Wow.
I think that's awesome. We covered a lot of stuff. I mean.
We did.
So I'm glad we got to hash it out because I'm reassured that you sort of felt the same way I did when you kind of first heard the word purity.
Yeah. Or... when you say purity to a modern woman, it's kind of like, back the fuck up, back the truck up. Because no, I just, yeah, none of us really, we bristle at the term, sir. Yeah, there's no purity here, motherfuckers. But I do understand, like, I understand it as focus, and I like that. I think we can agree on that.
Right. Oh, and one other thing on that topic, too. I mean, when you're talking about things like miasma or the original Greek ideas of ritual purity or impurity, a lot of the things that cause impurity, quote-unquote, in a ancient Greek context are things that Hecate is associated with. So the dead.
You know,
crossroads, bad luck, black animals.
Dogs? Are dogs bad?
Well, no, not necessarily, but they're definitely not for consumption. You wouldn't
eat
a dog.
No.
So a lot of her domains are things that are considered polluting or impure or kind of nego and bad. So,
yeah.
So you would be incurring miasma by doing, for example, necromancy. So the idea that certain things that would normally be conventionally ritually impure don't even apply to the worship of Hecate the way they would to the Olympians, for example. So, long story short, make an effort. Do a protocol. Like, have a system. Make it
intentional. But don't think of it as being pure or impure. Yeah. I don't think of it that way. Yeah. That doesn't...
We're really getting hung up. Style. Yeah, we're really getting hung up on the one word. But I'm glad that we hashed it out about exactly what it is that makes us bristle at it. And then what the purpose of these actions really is. And how it actually works for a sorcerer or witch.
Right. And I do think just so much of what he is talking about is based on he likes to use the word technology, which it is the technology that sorcerers in antiquity would use. So the idea of purity, while it doesn't necessarily resonate with us, very, very much resonated at the time. So, yeah. Yay, we did more. There's going to be so much more.
So much.
You may be like, okay, that's enough, Hecate. We get it. Or you may be loving it. I don't know.
But I think also the exploring sorcery that's based in this devotional practice that involves spells that have been repeated for at least almost 2,000 years, if not more. There is something to be said for acquainting yourself with the customs and protocols of that system. And absolutely. So and it doesn't necessarily have to do with Agate. Obviously, that's who we're talking about. But there's many, many other deities that are named in the Greek magic papyri and similar sources. So you can also...
Or any, I was going to say, any deity, really, if you wanted to try the system of, you know, calling them by their nicknames and like talking about their function or whatever. Like, I think it's a great system to try. And it's weird because we kind of have always done it without really, I think we were just like kind of mimicking other things that were written. But I mean, worked for us. Just saying.
I mean, I think the fact that we wrote invocations that basically follow this pattern without knowing that that's what we were doing sort of speaks to how effective it is in terms of, one, organizing your own thoughts about who you're summoning, what they mean, how you conceptualize them, what they symbolize to you, all of that. And then also to his point of, if you're trying to get a hold of somebody, being as specific as possible, you know, one, is going to get their attention better, and two, demonstrates that you did your homework. It's just respectful. That I think really spoke to me, and same. I was surprised and also not surprised that that was something we were unconsciously doing.
I know, right? Right. Surprised and not surprised. That's a great place to end. Well, until next time. Hocus pocus, bitches.